somebody else, that friends, that community members pushed me to run, that I even considered running. I think to any young person, young woman who is considering running for office, really seriously consider it and know that you have a movement behind you. You know, if you're a progressive candidate, if you really want to change things, we need to do it, and we really do have the support system that can make it happen for you.
And where can people find out more about your campaign?
Go to salazarforsenate.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Juliet. You're listening to The Katie Halper Show, and that was my interview with Julia Salazar, a community organizer running for state senate in New York's 18th district. To find out more about Julia Salazar, go to salazarforsenate.com. That's SalazarForSenate.com. Obviously, you know that part. And earlier in the show, I spoke to Ted Hamm, who is a co-founder of the Brooklyn Rail. He was an editor of the Brooklyn Rail from 2000 to 2012. His most recent book is Frederick Douglass in Brooklyn, an edited collection of the great abolitionist speeches. He teaches journalism and New York City history at St. Joseph's College in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. Check out Hamm's op-ed at City Limits. That's about Letitia James, who is running against Zephyr Teachout for Attorney General of New York. It's called Letitia James' Past Support for Tainted XDA is a Concern. You can follow Ted on Twitter at Hammer Daily. Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org online. See you next week.
It's been said that an image is worth a thousand words. A concept implying that a single visual element can replace a multitude of descriptive factors, that one image can carry meaning and definition far more adequately than any verbal or written description. In the case of our own definitions, that is, as Native American people, why have we been reduced to a single word, a single silhouette? Red skin, one word, two syllables. Labeled in many dictionaries as a noun, dated or offensive, and simply defined, an American Indian.
Sego, this is John Cain. Join me for a free screening of More Than a Word, Thursday, September 27th, 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue, right here in Brooklyn, New York.
And coming to you live from Brooklyn, New York, it's WBAI in New York. It's 8 o'clock, time once again for another edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Alex.
Good evening.
And Kyle.
Oui, quoi.
Well, let's get right to it, shall we? We have a job to do. We've been hired out to do this, and we're going to use our brains and the resources of our listeners to try and solve the mystery as quickly as possible, because that's what hackers do. We have been tasked with figuring out who wrote the secret editorial that just appeared in the New York Times from inside the Trump administration. Did you guys hear about this? Well, obviously you did, because we've all got our thinking caps on and our notepads out, physical and virtual. And it's just for people listening in the future, or for people listening, you know, who haven't been paying attention to anything else. There was an editorial that was printed in the New York Times today. This is how they prefaced it. They said, "The Times today is taking the rare step of publishing an anonymous op-ed essay. We have done so at the request of the author, a senior official in the Trump administration whose identity is known to us and whose job would be jeopardized by its disclosure. We believe publishing this essay anonymously is the only way to deliver an important perspective to our readers. We invite you to submit a question about the essay or our vetting process here." And of course, I can't give you the link. Well, I could read the link, I guess, but I can't. You can't click on it. Now that's it's unprecedented. This just happened a few hours ago. People are wondering, who is this? Who is it that said these things that basically don't make Trump very, very happy? I'll give you a couple of quotes here. "We believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic." Them's fighting words, especially if you're a senior member of the administration team. "Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back." I mean, this isn't somebody on the outside. This is somebody on the inside, who is still there. And that is what's amazing about this, the fact that they are still there. He doesn't know who they are. He's probably freaking out now. There's probably some kind of, lineup against the wall, and he's pacing back and forth and occasionally shouting in someone's face and trying to figure out who it is. And I just think that's kind of awesome.
But do you think that Robert Mueller could be considered a senior administration official?
No, I don't think so.
He's part of the Department of Justice?
I don't know. No, first of all, it would not be at all classy for him to do this.
Of course.
I don't think he would be one of the people.
Let me present some of my thoughts on this. I read this shortly before the show this evening, and I think if we want to try to deduce who this person could be, mm-hmm. perhaps the first exercise in which we should engage is to determine which of the senior administration officials say a lot of words without actually saying things or imparting a lot of meaning, because
they all do that. What do you mean?
Say
a lot of words without saying anything. That's DC.
Perhaps it's an art form down there, but who tends to kind of go on and make a lot of obvious points, but doesn't really let you in on anything going on behind the scenes. I mean, it seems to me almost like somebody perhaps in the press office. That's a pretty studied art.
Are you implicating Sarah? Because she's already condemned this.
I'm implicating her in all kinds of things.
Why do we need to know?
Well, I mean, I just like figuring things out. I think it's kind of, plus I want to take some bets on this, make it interesting.
Got it.
If we have a pool going, I'm told we can do this for this particular thing. It's illegal usually, but we can take bets on this particular item because it's of national importance.
Well, I do think, though, I don't really necessarily believe that it's somebody in the press office. Whoever the source was did go on here and there about the attacks on the press and how it destroys civility and discourse, suffers and whatnot. But he also did mention quite a few things about mentioned quite a few issues with Donald Trump's destruction of federal institutions. And when he mentions that, I think he or she is referring specifically to the intelligence community and the law enforcement community, notably agencies like CIA, NSA, and FBI, because they've all been summarily ignored with respect to Russian threats and other such activities. So my guess is that this would be somebody who is either in a law enforcement or intelligence capacity.
Okay, thank you, by the way, for saying he or she, because nobody in the mass media is doing that. They're all saying
right?
he, and I think it could easily be a she.
Yeah.
Not so easily, because the Trump administration doesn't have a whole lot of she's.
Not so many left, but think about Sally Yates and the stand that she took when she was head of DOJ. So, yeah, it could very well be a woman.
By the way, I've been told that I was incorrect in saying that it would be legal for us to gamble on this, on the air, or on anything else.
Yes, that's right.
So please just forget I said that. I was in error. I misinterpreted that.
Well, this could be sort of a game of skill.
Yeah, let's just do it for our own mental challenges here. Now, just to give you an idea, I'm trying to determine when they say a senior official in the Trump administration, how many people like that are there? How many senior officials are there? Now, I found a bunch of organizations, and here's a list: Office of the Chief of Staff, Domestic Policy Council, National Economic Council, the Office of Cabinet Affairs, Communications, Digital Strategy, Office of the First Lady. Yeah, wouldn't that be something? Office of Information Technology. I think we got some friends there. Maybe, who knows? Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, Office of Legislative Affairs. See, we don't know half these organizations, so it could be somebody in there. Office of Management and Administration, Office of the National Security Advisor, Political Affairs, Presidential Personnel is an office of that. Public Liaison, Office of Scheduling and Advance, Office of the Staff Secretary, Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy, Office of the White House Counsel, and Oval Office Operations. So I assume any leader of those organizations will be considered a senior official in the Trump administration. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think that's correct. And, you know, what senior means here could mean any number of things to any number of people. You know, in the federal service, you have the GS level of seniority. So somebody with, let's say, a GS-15 pay status could be considered a senior administration official. And then you have higher levels than that, which are SES, or the senior executive service. In the intelligence community, you have SIS levels, or senior intelligence service. And those are more of the executive level positions. Given the breadth of what was discussed in this particular op-ed, notably discussions centering around Russia, discussions about the media. It seems like this is somebody who's not at the GS-15 level or senior in the sense of they've just been promoted to SES level. I think this is somebody who actually does have a lot of White House access, and specifically access to the West Wing, where he or she sees what's going on and understands what's being put forth in front of the president and what's being held back from the public that the president would like to engage in, because there's a lot of activities that are discussed in this particular op-ed that make it very clear that there are other administration officials like this person that are preventing Donald Trump from doing what he would like to be doing. And this person would only have that particular knowledge if it was a highly senior person who would have access to the West Wing and know about these happenings on a daily basis.
And these are all good clues. Another clue that was brought to my attention. One thing that hackers and investigators and people like that like to investigate and use as a clue is sort of getting the writing style of something anonymous and figuring out what it matches up to. Someone I know on Twitter called Minus Baby pointed something very interesting out, which is that the writer of this op-ed used the archaic word lodestar.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is also an archaic word that Mike Pence likes to use a lot.
Oh, my God. Really? You think it's Mike Pence?
So maybe we're all thinking too small, and maybe it's a senior official in the Trump administration with access in the sense that it could be the vice president.
It's spooky because we were talking about this on the other radio show yesterday and about how Mike Pence, you know, horror that he is, would be preferable because at least our lives wouldn't be in imminent danger as they are right now. Wow, that would be something if he turned out, or somebody in his office turned out to be lodestar. Wow, I think today might have been the first time I even saw that word. There you go, Rob. That's a clue. That's a good clue.
You know, the other clue,
thank you to the Twitter user
that lends credence to this particular theory, is the fact that whoever the author was noted specifically that they were not part of the left resistance, that they believe in these Republican ideals, and that Donald Trump has been trampling all over these Republican ideals for a really long time. He doesn't take him to heart. He's not a real Republican, and that there have been great things that the administration has done in this person's view, like major tax cuts, deregulation. These are all pinnacles of the Republican Party's ideals. So, you know, I think the fact that that's in there also indicates that this is somebody who leans very much to the right, like somebody who could be in the vice president's office right now, perhaps, or in the, where does he live, the Naval Observatory, something like that, I think?
The vice president.
Yeah, vice president, yeah. I think.
Honestly, you know, Pence kisses up so much, he'd have to be a really good actor to pull this off.
Yeah, that would be really stunning.
Yeah, I'd be afraid of him then, afraid of him.
He is one of the biggest apologists, and he covers for the president constantly. Like, it just doesn't seem fitting, unless it is... as was mentioned, I think, in the course of the coverage today, some kind of alarm bell.
But you know why he's such a kiss-up is because he wants the job. And he knows he can get the job. He knows that he's got a really good shot at having that because there's no way Trump will last. So for him to risk everything by putting out this piece now, having it be exposed as him, yeah, I don't think but somebody who hangs out with him, yeah, I think that is definitely a good theory.
On the other hand, if this is a person with the insider access that we are presuming that they have, mm-hmm. this person could have inside knowledge about the inner workings and unravelings of this presidency to the extent that if it was somebody like Mike Pence, if he were to come out and step out anonymously first and then de-anonymize himself as the author of this op-ed, standing up for Republican ideals, he could very easily step into the shoes of the presidency and become himself the lodestar of the Republican Party.
Actually, I kind of follow that. That would be a sound tactic because then he would be able to distance, I think, from the culpability that I talked about on our show yesterday and discussion there with this news. And it just seemed that, you know, if he was just biding his time, it would still be a bad look for him coming in. But on the other hand, you know, if this president's really going down and he can come out looking like a hero, that's a different narrative. That works. That plays. Like, that's the kind of president we want.
Well, you know,
he's sticking up for our country.
A lot of people saying that this person, whoever this person is, should resign and identify themselves because you're a coward. And the people on the left and the right are saying this. You're a coward if you say these things and don't identify yourself. But I have a different feeling on it because you have somebody like this inside and you don't know who that person is. That person can do a tremendous amount of good by revealing things as they happen. If you resign and leave, who do you think is going to replace you? Not somebody with your standards, somebody else who's going to do exactly what they're told. And what do you gain from that? It's far better to have somebody in there. And the bonus about all that is that it drives Trump crazy. He is out of his mind tonight trying to figure this out. And I hear lie detectors are being wheeled into the White House as we speak. Polygraph machines, all sorts of things. I would not want to be a senior Trump official right now because they're all going to be questioned rather harshly.
Do not forget how important loyalty was, like the loyalty oath. When we were hearing about the federal investigation that Comey had sort of been in charge of as he was leading the FBI at the time. All of that loyalty stuff that came out that was really like egregious and alarming was revealed to be so incredibly important to him personally. And now just thinking of it, and that was kind of my point with like, why do we need to know? I mean, we don't really need to know. And in fact, that was why, by design, well, why this was unveiled and released and timed and done in the way and the structure to protect people and allow it to fester, right? That is a tactic in and of itself, and especially for someone, like you said, that could affect from the inside and report from the inside, and also have this unintended effect or sort of side effect of him in his role as president, looking over his shoulder constantly, and as you said, wheeling in, you know, the polygraph machines and everything. It's just... everything's on the table all of a sudden in a moment when he needs as much of the like technology and the teams and the assistance and the cohesion to keep the media at bay and also handle his private, you know, affairs and stuff. It's just amazing that just this the specter, just the suggestion that he could have disloyalty at this very moment is just crushing, I'm sure, and as you said, leading to the aggravation there.
Well, you know, we need to know for a variety of reasons. At some point, we need to know because otherwise, it can be claimed that this person doesn't actually exist. But, you know, to believe that, you would have to think the New York Times is in on the whole thing. And, of course, Trump says that sort of thing all the time, and his followers will also believe that the Times is taking part in something akin to a coup right now. And that is the talk you will be hearing over the next few days. Who is behind this and who is helping them, and why won't they come forward? It's you know, important to legitimize these things. And I think what you might see is that this person writing this particular piece in the Times today is not just one person. They refer to themselves in the plural a couple of times. They say that people have taken a vow, I believe, to protect the country. Here it is. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. That's something that you say after discussing it with other people. It's not just one person mouthing off. That's somebody who has talked to a bunch of other people. And you know what's also interesting about that particular sentence is there's a hyperlink in there under vowed to do what we can. It links to a story from the Times, I believe, yesterday concerning the new book that just came out. And it's interesting that they're linking to that. I don't know if the link was made at the suggestion of the submitter or if they're simply trying to make it more relevant. I think that should be pointed out if the person instructed them to make that particular link. It just shows you that this is not an isolated instance. This represents a lot of things that are going on in that particular place right now.
I think it shatters the narrative of the deep state in a lot of ways because it's a pivot from the tunnel vision that narrative has about intelligence being against freedom, being against this administration or success in general of our country. And, you know, when you have people that were picked by the president, ostensibly picked and replaced over and over again in the last 2 years or whatever, but whatever it's settled to now, having made, as you said, a pact, like an agreement, which is suggested in the language there, it is just amazing to imagine. And I think that definitely that extra perspective of people who were purported to be loyal now, well, how could you argue they are like deep state or that this is an attribute of that? Well, no, it's not related, but gee, is the sentiment not similar? Is there truth to that, right? Is that then substantiated, you know? And it, again, shatters that idea.
Yeah, and building off of that and what Emmanuel said, I would not be surprised to ultimately find out that there was not a singular author to this particular piece, that it might have been authored by a number of individuals and then submitted anonymously to the New York Times.
Mm-hmm. I would have signed it Spartacus. I just would have done that. I think that would have been cool.
Yeah, I think so too. But you know, also to bounce off what you had originally said, is that you know, you're absolutely right, I think, to say that having people on the inside is really going to drive him nuts. And it's just something that I've always felt since I was in law school, that change can come from within the federal government as opposed to without. And that we should, as the article says, rise above this tribalistic notion of politics and the divisions that Trump himself have created. We need to identify our common ideals as Americans, have those become our unifying characteristics, and ignore this nonsense that is destroying our discourse. And this issue of change coming from within as opposed to without, which is why I don't think that we should be so quick to cast aspersions on anybody working within the federal government. Mm-hmm. Anybody who works with the Trump administration, they're not necessarily bad people. I mean, even people, this will be an unpopular view on this station, even people I submit that work for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, there are going to be good people.
You mean like the guy who cuts the grass or something? How high up are you going in that organization?
I think pretty high up, because change is going to have to come from the top. The change often comes from legal memoranda that are written. Mm-hmm. When I went and worked for CIA many years ago, I was called by some of my law school classmates a war profiteer. And I made the same case back then, many years ago, that, you know, it was easier for me to effect change from within than it would be from without.
Yeah, but you also weren't separating kids from their parents. I mean, that's ICE is kind of like
you don't know that. You don't know that.
I'd like to assume that's not the case.
Yes.
But, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I agree to some extent that a lot can be done from within. But at some point, you have to realize that you don't belong there, that you're not part of that particular group of people, and that you are working against them. Now, what this person says is that a lot of what has been done so far, such as tax reform, deregulation, military things, it's all good, but it's happening despite, not because of Trump. So, yeah, this is a person that obviously has different viewpoints than a lot of us. But, yeah, you still can't say that this person isn't doing something good because, yes, you can do good things even if you disagree politically. And I think, you know, decent people, regardless of what kind of hat they wear, will always come through in the end. And that's what we are at now. You know, we are at that particular stage. And, you know, I know a lot of people are rolling their eyes and saying, what does this have to do with hacking? What does it do with technology? Has everything to do with it because hackers notice things. Hackers are able to tell when something is amiss and we're able to see the fine details. And, you know, a lot of smart people are in the hacker community that get things well before the populace. We are at a stage right now where I honestly don't know what state this country will be in another week. We could have a turnover at the highest level within the next few days. It's something I know a lot of people are hoping for, myself included, but how that happens is going to be very, very telling. We are at a precipice, and it would be kind of irresponsible to talk about the latest vulnerabilities in Windows at this particular point.
Yeah, and to make a counterpoint here, since I think we've all been speaking, you know, in fairly laudatory terms about this particular op-ed, you know, one point I would like to bring up is, you know, did this really say anything that we didn't know already?
No, nothing. But it came from within his people. That's what's so telling about it. Yeah, this is what people have been saying from the very beginning. But to hear it confirmed from the inside, and to know that there are people there that are, as described, grown-ups in the room. And, you know, it's interesting. The first time John Kelly gave a press conference, I remember the media going nuts saying, at last, there's an adult in the room. You know, that phrase kind of stuck. So it could be somebody in his particular corner of the office.
That's true.
There.
You know, another point, though, and that just brings it back to the usual topic of our ordinary conversations here on Off the Hook. I don't really necessarily care who the anonymous source or sources is or are. What would be more interesting to me is an article about how they communicated with this person.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's the next thing I want to talk about.
Oh, good.
I'm pretty sure it had to be through SecureDrop, which we talked about last week
right. On
this show. 2600 has SecureDrop. In fact, we got some interesting pieces since the last show. And, you know, some people just said hi in the message thing. We have no idea who you are, but hi back. Other people wanted to know about encryption, how they can encrypt things. And you know what? You don't have to encrypt things anymore because it already gets encrypted when you drop it into the SecureDrop application. And we have to decrypt it on our end. The computer we use is in a different location. It's air-gapped. Is that the right word, Kyle?
Yeah, among other things.
Which means it's not connected to the internet at any time.
Correct. Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of procedures and layers and just a lot of stuff to set you up for the best possible security. Of course,
we have
we're
to physically move data from one place to another.
Yeah.
Under guard, by the way.
Yeah.
And that machine is never connected. So there is no possibility that I can see where there could be a leak here unless it's on the sending end where somebody is reading out loud what they're typing or you know, if we got on a megaphone and but we still wouldn't know who the person was.
Yeah,
and we don't know who the people are that are giving us. And the New York Times does not. Well, they would find out who the person was through that communication by having a back and forth dialogue and saying, OK, we need some way of knowing that you're legit. And they confirm that in their own way.
I would just add that in a lot of the main mainstream publications and a lot of these leaks and revelations, you will not see any mention of the platform that was used. There are other platforms, of course, and there are myriad ways you can do essentially the same functional thing in the analog realm.
That's,
you know,
right,
you could devise your own system with shoeboxes or something. I don't know. But the point is, it is part of the operational structure and the suggested best practice not to cite the platform.
Right. You'll notice it's never cited. In fact, when we get leaks, we are not going to say, by the way, well, I did just say someone said hi to us. I didn't think that was particularly dramatic. But if we get something, say, like, you know, tax returns or audio tapes or videotapes or things like that of certain things or people, we won't admit that came exactly from that particular.
Well, you don't know. It wasn't like a DVD we picked up under like a piece of trash.
No, you'll never know. We won't tell you. We won't tell you. That's part of the security. But it's just good to know these things are out there and people can use them. And there are, as you say, other ones as well. But if it were something like SecureDrop, that is how they would have done it. They would have initiated contact they are able to preserve their identity up until a point where they feel comfortable talking to a particular person or meeting in a particular place. And that is how these things are done. It's not just dropping something onto a website like, you know, with WikiLeaks or something like that. This is, you control how it is distributed, who you talk to, and where it goes from there.
Yeah, and another caveat with this in particular, like just the opinion piece, it's a part of the New York Times that is compartmentalized as the editorial department. This has been mentioned a lot in the coverage today, but it's crucial to think about it. But the organization itself probably doesn't have access to whatever infrastructure they've used to keep the source anonymous. And in fact, it's probably just that department. It's probably just a couple of people working on it, just the critical individuals to help, you know, get that that story to light and nurture it along the way.
Yeah.
And they probably did reveal or otherwise verify in some way to one or, you know, just a very small compartmentalized group.
I would be
within the New York Times, they don't want to know.
I would be surprised if more than one or two people at the Times knew the true identity at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
And Kyle, you mentioned compartmentalization, and I think that's a really interesting point to make, because here you have a very clear example of the ways in which the media operates very similarly to an intelligence agency, where you have confidential sources, assets, essentially, right? And the sources and methods by which that information is collected from these particular assets is a very highly guarded secret that is compartmentalized to only a few people. I mean, it's the equivalent of having TSSCI, you know, plus clearance in the federal government, that only a few people are going to have access to this. Nobody really sees the entire picture. And I think it's incredibly important that this kind of information and the sources and methods are protected, because we're already seeing the president making these nonsensical tweets about this being a national security issue.
Yeah, in fact, there was one tweet a couple of hours ago just said, all caps, treason, question mark. First of all, why are you asking a question about, you know, whether something that you should know? And second of all, of course, it's not treason. What national security issues have, other than you being a menace to, you know, to the entire country? No, that it's not a treasonous issue at all.
You're being a menace. I was just going to add a menace. I was ad-libbing to the very idea of national security.
The other tweet that he just put out more recently, does the so-called senior administration official, unquote, really exist? Or is it just the failing New York Times with another phony source? If the gutless, all caps, anonymous person does indeed exist, the Times must, for national security purposes, turn him or her over to government at once.
I
cannot believe this is what this guy is. Turn him over to the government. That just sounds so evil right there. But he really believes this. And, of course, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, in the same tweet, he's calling the New York Times failing, and he's also asking them a massive favor. I mean, this guy's supposed to be a great negotiator.
No, he's not asking. He's telling them, you must turn them over to the government right away. And, yeah, that's I think everybody realizes that is not something that is imminent.
Another really interesting thing that I thought is worth mentioning is sort of the social engineering aspect of Trump. He's so two-faced, and where I got that is this Bob Woodward tape. He recorded this call, and it's just about the book being released. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, Mr. President, you know, there's this thing that's gonna, you know, would you like to? And he's talking about this you know, communications that he had had within Trump. And Trump is feigning ignorance. I don't know. I didn't talk. I would have loved to be in your book. Basically, so he can deny, you know, plausibly deny his lack of contribution and then cast it aside as a negative failed book, whatever. It totally shows how two-faced he is, because there's evidence that Bob had made the efforts and he documented his own sort of work and vetting and getting permission and access. And then here he is, you know, talking to the guy directly. And through this recording, we hear Trump talk about how he didn't know and how he would have loved to do this and that and the other thing, and how honest he thinks Bob is. It's just this complete facade of what I would say is like sort of a social engineering, but it's, I don't know, more sociopathic or something. There's a mix of things going on there, but it is it's really glaring to see just his chameleon like behavior when interacting with people. Even if it's, I mean, there's no discerning between lies. It's just however he wants to schlack a coating of you know what on it to get through that moment.
Right. I'm glad you brought up the book, because the book is very relevant to all of this. It's called Fear, Trump in the White House. Great title. It's coming out. It hasn't come out yet. Excerpts were being read yesterday. It's due to be released on September 11th. Whose idea was that? September 11th to release the book. Wow. So that's a week from yesterday. The book will actually be out. But think about it. This statement was released the day after that book came out, where all these quotes or stories were being told. This person or people wrote in to the New York Times, which is a process that takes time. You can't just write in and expect an editorial to be printed within minutes. This obviously took time to organize and to prepare. Whoever this is somebody that Bob Woodward talked to and is on the same page, quite literally, with what he is saying. And this serves as kind of a backup to what it is that he is claiming is going on inside the Trump White House. So, you know, if you want more clues as to who the person is, just simply see how many people Bob Woodward talked to. Maybe the clues are in some of the conversations that he has already revealed.
You know, and to build on what Kyle had mentioned with respect to Trump's manipulation tactics, you know, we see this happening already. What I believe will happen next is that he's going to try to manipulate the Bob Woodward issue to the extent that he energizes his political base to gin up enough political capital to put pressure on the senior administration officials of the Department of Justice to actually consider this a national security threat. And then, if he is able to do that, what they would do is make an application to, let's say, the FISA court any federal district court, if they could really make a great case about this being a national security issue, and perhaps somebody working on the behest of a foreign power, they could perhaps obtain a FISA warrant to begin surveilling people within the White House to determine who's communicating with whom. That could include their personal communications, their personal devices, their home networks, things like any kind of communications. And then separately, if it were to go to an individual federal court, and they could convince a judge that this was a national security issue, they may be able to have a federal judge issue a subpoena to reveal the source, at which point the New York Times would be placed in a position of revealing the name and identity of this particular source to a federal judge, or having the reporters held in contempt.
I'm going to push on that. I think that would be plausible. I'm not going to go down that with you because of the current special counsel. They're coordinating with other indictments and other cases, and I'm curious where you think that might fall in your hypothetical.
I don't necessarily know. I mean, that's a good question. I think the special counsel would be rather interested in speaking with this particular anonymous source. In fact, they may have already. Yeah, there's nothing stopping anybody from contacting the special counsel and saying, hey, I have additional information here that this person is violating his oath of office.
One other thing, I would not discount those names that came out with official denials based on the Bob Woodward statements in that book, because they're playing the game. Yeah. If even now I'm giving them a lot of credit. Assuming one of the John Kelly and Mattis, these guys that came out with the sort of classic. I mean, it was like right into the Trump template right. of like apologies. There's at least half a dozen of them, right, that had to come out after this book was released. And I don't want to, again, like, guess, because honestly, I don't care, like Alex had said. One of those people may be lying just to continue to perpetuate in this administration as deeply as they choose.
Wow, if Trump is hearing this, his head's going to explode. He thought those people were eliminated as suspects, but you're saying that if they deny right away, they might be the guilty ones trying to,
absolutely.
Trying to clear their names.
They are playing his game. He wow. set up the rules. They'll just continue to play it and then be as two-faced, but in the interest of what's right.
And just to look a little closely at this from our particular perspective as hackers, you know, I'm heading off all the tweets of, hey, hacker radio show, how can you spend half an hour talking about Trump? This is a massive case of social engineering, and social engineering is a central, I think, arm of the whole hacker world. And we are watching a huge case of a really talented social engineer.
Yeah, if we call him Facebook president, does that make it more more relevant to you?
Absolutely. And we're watching what happens when this is enacted on a national scale and when it's starting to have little holes poked in it. And this is just like, in a sense, this is really educational, just watching all this fall down like and happen before
and,
us.
And where else do hackers get a chance to actually put forth some theories that might turn out to be relevant and true, except here? In fact, here's our phone number, 347-335-0818. If you want to lend any particular theories, thoughts, expertise, things like that, our phone lines are wide open.
And honestly, I mean, I respect the opinion, but, you know, why don't you submit what's more relevant? Please, we ask every week, send us something. Here's our email. Here's our phone number. If you have something that is so relevant to hacking and to us and to the world, well, do tell.
Sit down, Kyle. They will. And we get lots of things. But, you know, right now we think this is very relevant. And a bit.
Spend your time on that.
Well, I think people do, to give them some credit there.
Yeah, well, we get it.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
But to bring it back to a potentially more relevant point, if we think about the incentives that others have to unmask the identity of this particular person, anybody who would want to curry favor with the president or the administration has a major incentive to try to crack this case as well. And I'm talking specifically about other foreign nations. Mm-hmm. Remember, it was not beyond Trump during the presidential campaign to make that idiotic statement, Russia, if you're out there.
Right? Yes.
You know, I'm half expecting another statement like that at the next Trump rally. Not that I go to them.
That's tomorrow, 7 p.m., Billings, Montana.
Oh,
so our Montanan listeners, please show up there and let us know what happens.
But here's a very serious issue about it when it comes to information security in these particular sources, because there are many, many, many other active and very effective intelligence agencies worldwide. They could be targeting the putative sources here. They could be targeting them without any lawful restrictions of federal law. They don't have to abide by the warrant process. They don't have to abide by the Fourth Amendment. They're operating illegally in this country to perform covert operations to mm-hmm. begin with. And that means that nothing is off limits, that the people at the New York Times that are working on the story, that the putative sources, that the federal officials in the White House could have any component of their life targeted, their home networks targeted, their traffic redirected and analyzed, you know, if their routers aren't particularly secure. So, you know, this is a wake-up call to everybody who's involved in the media in these particular
exactly,
stories.
Yes.
In an information security perspective and a hacker perspective, go home, update the firmware on your router.
Yeah, with the amount of technology that we use every day without the proper amount of security, the way we can be compromised is simply mind-boggling. Hey, we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi, okay. Let me go through first real quickly who I think it's not.
Okay.
I don't think, okay.
Make it
all
quick, because
right.
there's other people waiting.
Very fast. Okay. It's not John Kelly. It's not Matt Mattis. It's not anyone in his family. I doubt it's Mike Pence, because Mike Pence knows enough. Just give him enough rope to hang himself. He'll do it on his own. Doesn't have to be Mike Pence. Because it's not Sarah Sanders either. Anyway, here's who I think it is. I think it's Don McGahn, the White House lawyer. Why? Because it's just a couple of days ago that Trump put out a tweet, not even talking to Don McGahn, about he'll be leaving in the fall. took Don McGahn by the surprise. I mean, he knew his days were numbered anyway.
Okay.
But also, you know, Don McGahn also had said some time ago, if Trump asked him to fire Jeff Sessions or Rod Rosenstein or any one of those people, that he would resign before he did that. And once that tweet came out about Don McGahn is leaving in the fall, Don McGahn didn't even know that was coming. I bet it's Don McGahn turned around and threw his last shot at Trump. Anyway, that's who I think it is. He might have other people along with him, but I can't see anybody else in the White House and that West Wing who would have done it more than Don McGahn.
Okay.
So
thank you. Okay? Thank you for that theory. That's an excellent theory, and I'm going to write that one down. I think that's a good possibility. However, you did say it wouldn't be anybody in his family. That got me thinking. What if it was Jared? You know, it could be his son-in-law. It could be his daughter. It could be Ivanka. Maybe she's fed up. It's possible. Here's a line from the editorial that really got my attention. The erratic behavior would be more concerning if it weren't for unsung heroes in and around the White House. Some of his aides have been cast as villains by the media, but in private, they have gone to great lengths to keep bad decisions contained to the West Wing, though they are clearly not always successful. You know, when you say something like that, I'm thinking, Steve Miller? Really? No way. That guy is just evil incarnate. There's no way. But the fact that he's talking about other people, or she's talking about other people doing these things and being cast as villains, again, tells me there is more than one person at work here. It's a collective. And that's, you know, that's comforting to know that. And again, the phrasing of Americans should know there are adults in the room. We fully recognize what is happening, and we are trying to do what's right, even when Donald Trump won't, from his own people. Stunning. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, good evening.
What's on your mind?
Hey, I have a funny feeling, right?
Okay.
And it's Melania, his wife.
Okay. Does she qualify as a senior? I mean, I guess she's a senior.
I'm sure she hears everything going on.
That's for sure. Yes, and she never looks very happy about it.
FLOTUS is pretty senior, right?
Yeah, or somebody in the FLOTUS office. Okay, well, again, that's his family, so that would be something. Can you imagine, though, his family betraying him? It would be the end of the rope, I think.
Think of his wife.
Yeah. All right, thanks for that.
I think going against that theory, though, is this issue of the Republican ideals that were espoused in the particular article. I don't necessarily think that Melania would mention tax cuts as being something that was a great accomplishment by this particular administration.
I think that may be a clue there that it's not in that direction, but I could see her being incredibly frustrated with the amount of money he tends to spend on his libido. She probably wants to see that in her wardrobe or somewhere, you know, that's important. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of other things he could be investing his time and energy into.
I mean, let's not discount the theory here that there are probably certain red herrings in that particular article to throw the scent off, so to speak.
Damn, I didn't think about that. But yeah, you're probably right.
Maybe like Lodestar.
Yeah, maybe that's to
what
frame somebody else. Maybe they're doing that because they don't like Pence.
Rob, what's a Lodestar? I know he used it.
Do any of us know?
What is it?
I think I have one at home on a shelf somewhere.
You
okay,
don't know
I'll
either.
Look
nobody,
it up.
You look it up. Pal.
I'll keep myself busy. I'll just hush up over here.
Let me give the phone number again, 347-335-0818. There is other news. In fact, there's a very disturbing story coming out of Norway where someone who gave a talk at a Hope conference and is known in the hacker world, Arjen Kamfries, I'm probably mispronouncing that, 47-year-old Dutch privacy expert, cybersecurity expert. He's gone missing in Norway. This happened actually on August 20th. He was visiting the small city of Bodø. I've been to Bodø. We've been to Bodø a number of times, actually. It's kind of like, there's a lot going on there. There's an airport there. You can use it as kind of a transfer point if you're going further north or if you're heading over to Sweden. But he was leaving that particular place and getting on a long train ride down to Trondheim. That is the last anyone has heard of him. Now, this is somebody who is described as a cybersecurity expert, also a senior associate of WikiLeaks. And the story is getting quite a lot of attention for that alone, which I guess is a good thing. But unfortunately, whenever there's a WikiLeaks story, it just turns into just about Julian Assange. In fact, if you see stories about this guy being missing, you see Julian's picture and not his, which makes no sense whatsoever. We need to focus on this guy and make sure that he is found, that he is safe, and that nothing bad has happened to him. There's all kinds of suspicions because this is the kind of thing we're talking about. People who know how things work, people who reveal information, people who know how to do that securely, they can be threats. They can be people who are of great interest to others. It's basically all over the internet, but I'll spell out his name in case people would prefer to look it up themselves. Arjen, A-R-J-E-N, and his last name, Kamphuis, K-A-M-P-H-U-I-S. He wrote a book called Information Security for Journalists, which offers advice on investigative reporters working on national security and intelligence matters. You see, this all ties together in a really... really interesting, but also scary way sometimes. Now, he has Dutch citizenship, and he likes to travel, but the fact that he's disappeared and has not made any of his appointments in the last week or two is very, very disturbing. So we are keeping a close eye on that particular story as well. Again, our phone number is 347-335-0818. I know we had a couple of calls come in, and they timed out. So if you got timed out on, please call back. We have a couple of minutes left.
I hadn't realized that he wrote that compendium on information security for journalists until you mentioned it right now. And, you know, that's something, you know, we consult with a lot of journalists, and actually that's something that we've pushed out to them many times. I didn't realize it was the same person.
There's a number of his talks online. In fact, the talk that he gave at The Last Hope, that's online. There's a TED talk he gave more recently. By The Last Hope, I don't mean the most recent one. I mean the one in 2008, by the way. So hopefully he turns up. Hopefully he's just out exploring somewhere, doing something without telling anybody. And the thing is, he knows how to go off the grid, and that's what a true hacker knows how to do, is to turn off the phone, to not connect, to not be found if you don't want to be found. And let's hope it's something like that. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Hi. What's on your mind?
Okay. Now, I was saying I give those guys a lot of their Kavanaugh guy a lot of credit, man. Just to sit there and endure questions like that for like 5 or 6 hours, man. I know with me, I have a headache at the end of the day.
Yeah, you're talking about the about Kavanaugh.
Yeah, man. Yeah, now, how did they sit there and endure, like, you know, those questions, man, for so long?
It's
like the guy didn't take like a water break or something.
Well,
like,
I think he took a number of breaks, but it takes patience. But when you realize you're on at least two C-SPANs at once, and a nation, you know, watching, and an audience of millions. I guess you behave yourself, at least, for a little while.
Good night.
Well, thank you for that. I thought he was going to say something else, but go ahead.
Yeah, you can really hand it to Kavanaugh if you want, but just don't try and shake his hand.
Oh, God, yeah. The Gutenberg thing. That was, we talked about that on yesterday's show as well. The parent of one of the murdered children in Parkland tried to shake his hand, and he just looked at him with contempt and turned away. And I understand he was given a second chance to do that and refused. This guy is scum, okay? I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so crude, but there is no other word for it. Yeah, that a potential Supreme Court justice I see as scum.
I mean, to the caller's point, you know, this is exactly what the federal judiciary is trained to do. If you think about what they endure on a daily basis at the trial level, not necessarily at the appeals level, they sit through some of the most boring nonsense you could ever imagine on a daily basis, that having an interactive day like this is probably seen as a nice respite. I mean, could you imagine sitting through a 2-week-long trial, you know, that has to deal with insurance coverage under one particular clause or under an error or omissions policy, and what is the definition of an occurrence and things like that? I mean, these are the cases that have shaped the legal system in the United States, and they're so incredibly boring, but when you have suffered through enough of these and enough depositions...
You're boring me describing this.
Exactly. I'll shut up.
Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Hello?
Hi. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to make a prediction of who I think the leak would likely be.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, I've worked actually around a lot of people around the White House. I think it's likely going to be one of the people in either the executive support staff that work either with his communications department that have access to all those records, or likely Secret Service agent.
Well, would they be defined as a member of his senior staff?
Anyone that's a 14 or a 15 or above is considered senior government.
14, you want to describe what that means, 14 or 15?
Okay, so it's like a GS, like a general service scale, GS scale.
Okay.
You have like the equivalent of lieutenant colonel in the Army or commander in the Navy.
Okay.
That's when you're considered a senior official.
I got a question for you, caller.
Yeah.
Do you think that this would be somebody in the civil service as opposed to somebody in active duty military service?
I think it's likely someone in the civil service.
Why do you say that?
Because if you're in the military, you're going to fall under the penalties of the UCMJ because you're questioning or criticizing your commander in chief.
If you get
you're
caught,
also doing
yeah.
The,
well, I think caught. This person will be revealed at some point, fairly soon. I think.
Yeah, I think the caller is absolutely right about that.
Yeah. Any other theories?
That's the only one I'm going with right now.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling us and for lending your expertise on this.
Thank you.
Take care. Wow. I love getting calls from people that know what they're talking about. And we learned so much from that alone. Which,
yeah, well, he made a great point that this could be somebody in the Secret Service that has access to the president, that sees the daily happenings. You know, this jibes with everything that we've been saying as well.
Wow. It improved my opinion of the Secret Service quite a bit, I'll tell you that.
We don't have much time left, so I wanted to quickly mention this story out of Australia because it's very time sensitive.
Yes. Do you have that recording that you made? Or,
I have it on a drive somewhere, I can point you toward what we're talking about. If you're an Australian, your government is considering the Assistance and Access Bill 2018, and you only have until this Monday, the 10th of September, to comment on it. So if you go to digitalrightswatch.au, that's digitalrightswatch.au, and scroll down to the link that says Defend Encryption. You will get all the information on what the bill is, what it means, and how you can organize against it.
Uh-huh.
Because it's actually very frightening when you look into it. Basically, it's another attempt to get device manufacturers, coders, technology world basically to build backdoors so the government can crack open encryption. And that's, as we've said on this program, very, very dangerous indeed. So digitalrightswatch.org.au. It's an Australian domain. And
it seems like they never stop with these things.
Yep. It never stops. And there's a big thing going on with basically the Five Eyes countries, which is the United States, Canada, the UK, Australia, and I think New Zealand, basically getting together and being super cooperative with one another based on what they want to do and how they want to share information on people.
So now we found the file that you made. Now maybe you could tell us something about this before it starts playing.
This is a video made by The Juice Media, who've also made Rap News, which we featured in the past on this program. And it's basically a satirical government ad. It's called an honest government ad.
And this is not safe for radio, but you fixed it, so it is safe for radio.
I did.
Okay, well, let's hear this.
Hello, I'm from the Australian government. Do you have something to hide? Nah, just kidding. We're not some fascist regime. Seriously, though, do you? Unfortunately, encryption makes it hard for us to spy on you these days. So just to make sure, we're introducing yet another law to expand the surveillance state. Introducing the Assistance and Access Bill, or ASS Access, for short. Oh, relax. Despite how it sounds, we're not trying to access your data through your back door. We're just after the keys to your front door. Yep, ASS Access will force tech companies to do our dirty work for us. For example, by making them insert a little secret sauce in their apps, which lets us access your device once you download the latest update. And if they refuse, we'll find the shit out of them. ASS Access. It doesn't break encryption, only your trust in your favourite apps. To bring you ASS Access, we've taken the UK's fascist spying law and made it even more fascist by removing any need for judicial oversight. But don't worry, we promise to only spy on you if reasonable and proportionate. And you know you can trust us. We're the same who doxed a welfare recipient for criticising us, who are prosecuting a whistleblower for exposing our misconduct, who throw kids in concentration camps for seeking asylum, and prosecute the journalists who report on them, and who gave $500 million of your tax dollars to a foundation full of our friends. So of course you can count on us to be reasonable and proportionate. And if we're not, well, you'll never hear about it. Because we've also introduced a 10-year jail sentence for any Snowden wannabes who disclose our abuse of ASS Access. ASS Access. Brought to you by Australia, where the laws of heads can't trump the laws of math, but they can trample human rights. Which is why, to test this f***ery, we chose Australia, the weakest of the Five Eyes Alliance, thanks to our lack of a Bill of Rights. So international data requests will now be funneled through us, compromising not just Aussies, but all of you
us too.
You're welcome. We'd love to know what you think of Arts Access, so we've set up a public submission system where for a limited time, you can protest our next step towards a f***ed up dystopia. Australian Government. Relax, we're not after your d***hicks, just the last shreds of your civil liberties. Authorised by the Department of Home or Pairs.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you, Rob, for putting that together. Ass Access. Okay, great. That's going to be our show for tonight. We are pretty much out of time. But we have this one important announcement.
Yes, 2600 meetings happen all over the world this week. 2600.com/meetings. Find your own or start it.
And Hope videos are out from the Circle of Hope. You can go to hope.net or 2600.com to see how you can get your copies. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We will read your emails. If you have something secure to drop to us, go to our secure drop page, 2600.com/secure drop. We'll see you next week. And by then, who knows what state the country will be in.
I like BAI.
The Great Studs Terkel.
I know it's known as a kooky, goofy station, and yet it's so exciting for that very reason. I like BAI. I wish there were more stations like our number, but more like this, with the outsider's views expressed often and frequently.
Today is August the 29th, 2018, as we go down the final stretches of summer. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question a little differently. Do you know who's using your personal data? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key, My colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the programs available on WBAI.org/archive. We're also on PRN.FM and on our website, PCRadioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York, on the radio, and PRN.FM on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are a little different.
Yes, they certainly are. Yes, I caught that wrong date on this program, and I'm going to search for this week's program, but we'll continue listening to last week's show until such time as we can find the new one. Please stand by.
Of course, there are statistics. In the personal computing sector, the largest installed base operating system is Windows, with 82.88% of the market at the end of July 2018. This is followed by the Mac OS X operating system with 12.52%, all variants of Linux distributions with a very small 1.17%, Chrome OS on the Chromebook at 0.5%, and 2.38% of other operating systems. Based on the news in the computing news media, I had figured that Linux was the leading server operating system. Today is September the 5th, 2018. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question a little differently. Do you know who's using your personal data? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key. My colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the programs available on WBAI.org/archive. We're also on PRN.FM and on our website, PCRadioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York, on the radio, and PRN.FM on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are a little different. Later in the feature segment, in which I covered from the tech corner, I will be talking about reinstalling Windows 10 from a free upgrade of 7 or 8.1. And I'll be covering also, is getting the new 2018 iPhone worth going into debt? But before we get to all that, let's get to the news. Apple has had to warn customers of a more clear and present danger to existing models. Taking to its official website, Apple warned customers that models of its iPhone 8 contain logic boards with a manufacturing defect. Affected devices may experience unexpected restarts, a frozen screen, or won't turn on. Apple says it has determined that only a very small percentage of iPhone 8 models are affected. Apple says the issue impacts iPhone 8 models made across a six-month time period between September 2017 and March 2018 in China, Hong Kong, India, Japan, Macau, New Zealand, and the United States. The good news is Apple has a simple way to check your phone's eligibility. You simply enter the serial number in its checker and Apple will repair it free of charge. The service will also be available to owners for 3 years after the first retail sale of the unit, and the iPhone 8 Plus and iPhone X are not impacted. But don't get too excited yet. iPhone 8 owners thinking they can send in a damaged unit or phones in poor condition should read the fine print. Apple warns, if your iPhone 8 has any damage which impairs the ability to complete the repair, such as a cracked screen, that issue would need to be resolved prior to the service. In some cases, there may be a cost associated with the additional repair. So be careful, because damage you can live with and may not be tolerated by Apple repair team, and fixing an iPhone 8 chassis is seriously expensive.
You can also expect your iPhone 8 to be running the latest version of iOS when it's returned to you, something which is not always welcomed by its owner. Apple's warning means serious hardware faults have now affected the iPhone 8, iPhone 7, and iPhone 6. This may put you off the company's upcoming and all-new iPhone 9. Google announced several new online tools designed to help former members of the military find jobs or attract new customers to their businesses. One tool allows vets to type in the search term jobs for veterans, followed by specific military job codes to see civilian jobs with skill requirements that match their service experience. The military job code feature also has been deployed to Google's Cloud Talent solution, which is used by FedEx, Encompass Health Careers, Siemens, Career Builders, and others. They hope to use the technology to help veterans understand the full range of opportunities open to them across many different fields. Right now, those opportunities are getting lost in translation. There isn't a common language that helps recruiters match a veteran's experience with the need for their skills and leadership in civilian jobs. As a result, one in three veterans of the roughly 250,000 service members who transition out of the military each year end up taking jobs well below their skill level. A tool that acts as a sort of Rosetta Stone for translating military experience into civilian skills is valuable to recruiters as well as job seekers. For recruiters, it's not always immediately obvious how skills picked up in the military translate into the business world. In the military, humility, for example, can work against someone making a transition from the service to civilian life. In the business setting, you have to promote things you've done and let people know about your accomplishments as part of networking, while in a military setting, that might sound like bragging. In addition, soft skills learned in the military may be overlooked. Leadership, commitment, and character are all things that have value in the business world. Online job search tools geared towards military experience are helpful for employers who put a premium on hiring veterans or looking for certain skill sets. However, there's still a problem of skills that could be useful in the private sector but don't translate well into the civilian job market. Warriors for Wireless, which retrains veterans for jobs in the communications and wireless tower industries. There are certain skill sets that don't work. There is not much of a market for torpedo techs or bombardiers in the private sector, except with some defense contractors. But even these skills should be evaluated for leadership, management, hard work, and reliability. Google's commitment to help veterans find a role in a civilian work environment is positive, especially as because its approach is to treat military service and experience like college. For example, if you major in an area of study, you use that keyword in your job search and include it in a resume. By taking the military occupational specialty code, defining the skills and what that veteran did in that service, then matching it to the occupation, it more accurately translates the skills for the targeted job. There are disadvantages to using specialty codes to profile job candidates, though. It puts the veteran's specific skills sets in a box and can limit options. When you're in the military, you're assigned to jobs, but you may also have the capacity to excel in another position. By limiting veterans to their specific roles via these tools, they may not have the opportunity to work outside of their comfort zone or to do a job they like or could thrive in. The latest release of Chrome is Chrome version 69. Chrome is releasing an entire new design for Chrome with new features and tweaks to the browser's overall appearance. But one of the big new features is an improved password manager. Chrome will now offer to automatically generate a random password when you sign up to websites for the first time. This password will be stored inside a Chrome Google account securely and sync across desktop and mobile versions of Chrome. This should stop regular Chrome users from always picking the same password for each site and ultimately ending up with a security headache if a site is breached. Chrome's password manager is a welcome change, but you may still want to use a dedicated and separate password manager. Chrome only manages passwords inside its browser, so if you sign into various mobile apps or apps on a TV like Netflix, then those login combinations won't be stored in a Google account. That's a particularly relevant now that iOS 12 is about to introduce the ability to autofill passwords across browsers and apps from third-party password managers. Google's choice is to offer a password generator and manager will likely trigger debate about best password practices. Some security experts argue web users should simply remember a long and memorable phrase for each password, while others recommend a random password with special characters that's managed by a password manager. Both options should